Welcome back to episode 379 of the Critical Myth Podcast. I am Edmund from Greenville, once again your temporary fill-in host. John's says he has business in New York, but I'm pretty sure that he's just picketing BlackRock, the CBS headquarters, in support of Detective Fusco. But today we have with us...
Bronze Thumb from Australian and from Australia. And how do I make slushy?
I don't know, but I think it's blue. Once again, we were talking about the shows that Gary is not watching yet, although we are really desperately trying to get him up to speed on Arrow so we can get all of his DC Universe input, which probably would have been helpful this time around. And as you can probably deduce, we are going to be talking about Supernatural, Arrow, and then ending up with Person of Interest at the beginning of its three-episode event. But first... is there something you could warn them about, Bronze Thumb?
Yes. Most people need to be wary of ginormous spiders. But the rest of us should just probably be warned that in this episode we're going to go completely all out with the spoilers on the shows that we're watching. We've left it about a week to talk about these shows, giving you guys a chance to catch up. If you haven't caught up by this stage, then and you don't want to be spoiled, it's probably worth tuning out. But there will be spoilers.
Absolutely. And without further ado, let us jump right in. And here is the promo for Supernatural.
Next Tuesday.
Now I'm a sales associate.
It's hard to live a human life.
Four victims suddenly exploded.
Number one.
You say an angel did this?
It's no ordinary angel.
On Heaven's hit list.
Hello, Castiel. I came for you.
Supernatural. All new episode next Tuesday at 9, 8 central on the CW.
And that would be Supernatural episode, season 9, episode 6. Heaven can't wait. Castiel gets a job and starts enjoying life as a human. But when he learns about some local disappearances, he asks Dean to help him investigate. Meanwhile, Crowley agrees to help decipher the tablet in return for one phone call to hell. And yeah, it probably felt like a phone call to hell. Bronze Thumb, why don't you get us started on what I started thinking of as Adventures in Babysitting Supernatural style.
So this is kind of an odd episode because the thing that it felt like the thing that they could get the most mileage out of was not necessarily front and center, which was Castiel getting a 9-to-5, trying to make friends, trying to make slushies, all that kind of fun stuff, and easily the most interesting thing about the episode, and it felt like it was getting shortchanged by Dean hunting down this monster and Sam and Kevin basically playing Zero Dark Thirty with Crowley.
Yep.
That kind of colored my reaction. There was nothing about the episode stood out as bad. The way last week you had things that were kind of rubbish. Instead, it's more down to things that kind of weren't necessarily paced right or weren't necessarily given the prominence they should be. It was just kind of like good elements that didn't necessarily meld together as well as they could have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I will say the one thing I did like about the Castiel part was them playing with the expectations a little bit, and I honestly was, was not quite catching on. Was sitting there going like, good God, Misha Collins is an attractive man, but does every woman he meet have to fall at his feet? And so I did like the little switch of him showing up and discovering that he's there as the babysitter, not as the date. I'd agree with you. I hadn't quite thought of it in terms of the balance in the episode, but kind of more of that. More of that stuff, and exploring Castiel trying to be human, which can certainly be mined for considerable comic effect, and character development too. Could have been more interesting, and certainly having and to a certain extent. Admittedly, we are only a quarter of the way into the season, but in terms of the conflict with Heaven and the other angels, I feel like they're just barely scratching the surface with that. And it was certainly helpful to have Castiel around, so he actually knew what the pink slime angel was, who he was, and what he was doing. But I still get the feeling that they're not quite sort of hitting on all cylinders for this season. They're throwing stuff out there, and I do get this sense that they've done a lot of place setting, but they haven't really started digging into all of the possibilities. And I think that extends to what's going on in Hell as well, for that matter. They brought Abaddon back. They've started setting up, certainly with this episode, establishing the new power lines and potential conflicts, and having Mark Sheppard put on hold by Hell, and playing around as he does so well with Sam is enjoyable, but it's feeling like stuff that we've seen before. And I do think the mystery with the syringe did bring up some interesting stuff at the end. So I certainly hope that they've got they do have much more in the wings and planned, because it does feel for now like they are sort of being a little tentative with most of the elements that are going on. And certainly with the syringe, I know, but I mean, my initial thought was, if that was Kevin's blood that he managed to secrete, or what brought back to mind to me was the end of last season, and Crowley getting sort of humanized with Sam's blood, and wondering if almost he's kind of gotten addicted to feeling partially human. That's his big secret now. But what did you think of that stuff?
It feels like they've waited so long to follow up on that sort of thing, that the what we got at the end of the previous season has lost its impact.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if this had come a few episodes earlier, all that stuff with Crowley would have been slightly fresher in my mind, and it would have seemed like more of a big deal. And instead, here it happens. I'm just like, oh, all right, that's right. There's the thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, just sort of a more flat reaction.
Right. Yeah. And and this, it's. Yeah, kind of unfortunate, because I do like some of these situations they've set up, and it is starting to feel like they aren't following through on them properly, and certainly aren't taking as good advantage as they could of this cast that they've put together over the seasons, and all the relationships that they've developed. And and in this episode, I think in particular, it kind of brought it to a head was this whole idea of an angel who's fallen to Heaven, who's having to adjust. I mean, as Castiel certainly had to do so brilliantly and amusingly for so many seasons, and It wound up feeling a little too obvious and kind of too rote. I mean, there was a real opportunity to again kind of flesh out the angel storyline and really delve into start delving a little bit deeper into how they're making this adjustment, the different ways they might be making this adjustment. And instead he really did wind up being kind of more of a monster of the week, and it just feels odd to me. I mean, I don't know if they're trying to avoid some of the excesses of the whole Leviathan storyline, but it it just feels odd to me that they set up the, you know, organization that the other fallen angels were starting to create and haven't really checked back with that. And you know, and at this point, it's a, you know, yes, it is relatively early in the season, but on the other hand, it's, you know, a quarter to a third of the way through, so we should kind of be starting to see some of those conflicts gelling out and, you know, really starting to take shape. And I'm really not getting that sense at all. And it's that at this point feeling, you know, like this, you know, this season is a bit of a disappointment. I know John in his review was talking about the over on the website, talking about the sort of difficulties of middle chapters. And Jeremy Carver, you know, has said it was his 3-season arc that he's got planned out for the show, and possibly concluding arc that will take them up to 10. You know, that may be part of the issue here, that you know, yeah, sort of trying to keep the momentum going in the center part of the story can be a little tricky.
Well, you're not wrong. It's the bit that's got to keep our interest, even though it's not the setting up the story or the finishing the story bit. I don't know, going back to slightly, I agree with what you mean about in the end it felt like they were dealing with a very monster of the week kind of problem, which is always kind of weird when it's an angel. But, yeah, it did feel like things that could have been a lot more important, had a lot more impact, they felt a lot more reduced. They felt a lot simpler than necessarily deserved. Things like, you know, angels adjusting to life on Earth, be they the, you know, the graceless kind like Cass, or the ones that still have their power and are still trying to figure out what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was too simple.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, it's one of those where sort of, you know, the more we talk about it, the more I keep seeing, having ideas pop into my head of the things they could have been doing or should have been doing. And, I'm not used to thinking that with Supernatural quite as much as we've been doing, so far this season. And, I guess we will just have to hope that they start picking things up as we get into the center section of this season. So over on the website, John did give this a 7 out of 10. What would you rate it?
I would go 7 out of 10 too. I feel like it's buoyed by the Castiel stuff, which was not just funny in the way that Castiel doing fish out of water stuff often is, but it was interesting, and there was some real feeling to it, that sense of Cass still trying to find his place in the world.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think I would agree with the 7 as well. And hope they can pick it up a little bit, cuz there is interesting stuff that they've set up, and it would be nice to see them play with it a little bit more. And that said, we will move on to another show that was maybe taking a little bit of a break from some of the excellence we've been used to recently, but that would be Arrow, and here is the promo for that.
Agent Michaels has gone dark.
She was my wife. We're going to bring Lila back.
My favorite American!
You need to help a friend.
There is nothing money cannot buy in this country.
They have him. Clocks running.
Violent psychopaths. Killers.
What happens in Russia stays in Russia.
Deadshot. Arrow. All new. This Wednesday at 8, 7 Central on the CW.
Okay, and that is Arrow Season 2, Episode 6, Keep Your Enemies Closer. Diggle pursues Deadshot in Russia and tries to rescue Lila, who has gone missing. Oliver and Felicity join Diggle, but things get messy when Isabel insists on tagging along. Meanwhile, Moira's lawyer tells Thea that dating a known criminal is hurting her mom's case. And, as preparing for the podcast this week, I kind of had trouble sometimes separating Arrow from S.H.I.E.L.D. because it did feel like there was sort of similar stuff going on with these field missions, trying to rescue people or take stuff out. And with this one, we have Diggle being called in by Argus. And yes, this is one of those cases where having people who are more versed in the DC universe would probably be helpful to bring it, to give us more of the background there. But unfortunately, it's not the case yet. As I mentioned at the top, Gary has been making his way through the early parts of Arrow, and with reassurances from me and John that yes, things are a little rocky at the beginning, but it does get much, much better. So hopefully at some point he will actually be along with us for this. And it's Diggle finding out that Lila has been captured, of course, wanting to, you know, immediately wants to be the valiant knight and go dashing off on his own, and equally unsurprisingly, that you know, that Oliver and Felicity naturally want to tag right along, and you know, so the Arrow team does go into action. This is the return for Summer Glau, making a nuisance of herself by tagging along and, you know, trying to be a responsible corporate person. This one, compared to some of the other episodes we've had, this one was feeling, it was certainly enjoyable, but felt a little generic. This is kind of similar to some of the comments we had on about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where this one felt a little more by the numbers. Even the stuff with Isabel, with Summer Glau's character, it was sort of like, you know, it was almost like by the numbers, you know, let's humanize her, and, you know, and, you know, throw in a little, you know, sort of love triangle-y stuff. You know, with the co-CEOs, you know, sort of with the whole getting a little drunk, greeting each other, discovering that yes, they're both lonely, and you know, go and falling into bed together, and you know, and certainly the best part of all that was Felicity discovering the tryst and her comments at the door there, Yeah, what was your sense of it? I mean, were you more enthused with it? Were you feeling about the same? Or
I think you hit the nail on the head. This sort of felt like a different show for a week. It felt a lot more Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It felt a lot more, you know, spy action kind of show. And while that's not too great a stretch from, you know, the basic of, you know, the basic formula of Arrow, there is, you know, the teams who take out bad guys and their missions and stuff like that. It felt like a little bit, I don't know, it felt a little bit too removed from what I think is, it makes Arrow unique from other shows. Those qualities, for one thing, the fact that the Green Arrow is running around, and that sense of like that grounded superheroism and whatnot. This felt like the team could have been anyone. And that's not a particularly good thing. It's not what you want a TV show full of characters that you really, really like. That was my strongest takeaway. I felt like they tried to take these characters out of the formula, but instead they sort of took them out of the show altogether.
I mean, there really was sort of a lot of generic TV moments in this one. I was just thinking about the whole issue with Roy, where, you know, one, you know, certainly initially, you know, I mean, it was just from the whole setup of his, you know, that part of the show of him being in the wrong place at the wrong time, getting caught by the police. You know, it was a nice little acknowledgement of the change in circumstances when he mentions he's working for. I can't remember what he's calling him at the moment, whether it's the vigilante or the hood or whatever. But with Quentin now that he's basically Team Arrow, agreeing to let him go. But then the whole thing with the lawyer and saying, oh no, you're hanging out with the known felon, and coming around to. I'm hoping to get onto the trial soon, because at this point it's sort of becoming this crutch of going to the prison for Moira to have her one scene of in this case, I mean, I guess last time it was the kids being upstanding, and now Moira getting to be upstanding and tell her daughter that she should just go with her heart, and Roy's been the best thing for her, and ignore the lawyer. So yeah, that just all really felt like another generic TV moment, and this is one of those shows we've started to come to expect a little bit better from them in that regard.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. It was a really, the whole episode was designed to be problems that could be solved in the space of one episode without touching the status quo at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, even the flashback stuff back on the freighter also felt like it was kind of setting stuff up for sort of putting the pieces in play that they're going to need. I mean, showing us Slade's burns, Shadow, tending to them, and to a certain extent, I mean, even the stuff with Oliver was just intended to get them to the point at the end when he, the big reveal that yes, he knows who he is. So it kind of felt like, they were taking a little out of the country interlude and kind of getting away from what's been really working for the show. And hopefully, when they get back to Starling City, we'll get back to more things a little bit closer to usual. Now, over on the website, Nadim reviewed this episode. He gave it a dead average 7 out of 10, and I think I would agree with that. I mean, there was anything absolutely terrible going on. It just wasn't what we're used to, and actually, even in terms of the Deadshot, reveal and them having to work together, even that seemed to be there just to give us the bombshell at the end that it was Hive, another DC Universe thing we can get more background on from others, that was actually responsible for Diggle's brother. So I'd say 7, and time to step up their game back in Starling City. What would you give it?
Yeah, 7 out of 10. I think dead average is the word for it.
Okay, so we will take a little break and then come back with something that I think we're going to think is a little bit higher than average. Okay, well, we are back, and we'll be moving on to Person of Interest, and here is the promo.
CBS Tuesday, a Person of Interest three-episode event begins.
A city drowned in God's black tea.
I received numbers this morning.
You're the best partner I ever had.
A minor swell of violence.
Detective Fusco. Are you all right?
I'm sorry, Lionel.
Okay, and that is Person of Interest, Season 3, Episode 8, Endgame. Finch receives 38 numbers at once, which turn out to be connected to a mysterious person who is investigating a major conflict between HR and the Russian mob. Meanwhile, Carter's past with her son's father is revealed through a series of flashbacks. And this, of course, is the opening episode of the much-promoted three-episode mid-season sweeps-encompassing, mid-season finale event. Really did open things up with a bang. Sorry, I couldn't resist. Very much Carter's story. Finch receiving the 38 numbers. I did particularly like the little detail of, we already knew it's from the Dewey Decimal System. This is how the machine gives him the numbers. And Finch surrounded by all those stacks of books as he's having to... decipher all of those numbers. I know for me personally, with even though they were sort of trying to make it a little mysterious, but I don't know if it's something about just the way she was holding herself, but or just the way things had ended in the end of the previous episode with Tierney fingering Quinn and knowing that Carter had something very solid to be going on, but I. Kind of figured from the beginning that was Carter lobbing that grenade into the truck, which certainly didn't detract from the episode at all. The focus is so much on her throughout this, and it was one of those cases where being slightly ahead of the characters didn't, if anything, just enhance things. And as they were tracking it down and confirming that it was in fact her, it was just kind of adding that new layer. And very expectantly waiting for the rest of the team to catch on and catch up, so we could get everybody in place. And the thing that I really liked that they've been really kind of setting up all season is the how independent she's been about this investigation, and I thought they did a really good job of building that up, and to the point where and then in this episode obviously giving us all of that background. On her relationship with her husband, her husband, the father of her son, who's been this very, absent figure. What we learned there was really kind of reinforcing that sense of, Carter as someone who's very independent, who, goes ahead and gets things done. And, I particularly liked the scene with her son after Paul, her husband, shows up unexpectedly and she has to kick him out. And then when she's comforting her son, she doesn't sort of give him any false hope of reconciliation. She's sort of well aware what the situation is and how it's likely to play out, and just emphasizes it's the two of us, and I'll always be here for you, we need to rely on each other, which just completely played into this whole sense of the HR investigation being very much her own mission, and playing into that whole sense of the this really might be her fatal flaw. And so when we get to that final scene and that final confrontation, there's You know, they have been playing up throughout this promo that a hero will fall, that somebody's not going to make it through this this 3-episode arc, and the producers and interviews have basically confirmed that yes, it will be somebody. And despite all the fingers being pointed at Fusco in the promos, and even some of the stuff going on in this episode, when the Carter gives him the infamous, you're the best partner I've ever had line, which is usually a big red flag. It really felt very, very real that it might wind up being Carter at the end of this episode. But what did you think about that stuff?
I'm not sure where to start. Really.
Oh, I know. This is so packed, but yeah.
Yeah, no, that's what struck me, was just how much stuff was going on in this episode. At any given moment, I could have sworn, oh, that's it. This is the big climax, and they're about to tell us, tune in for scenes from next week's episode. Mm-hmm. And it just kept going.
And it
sort of played with that expectation that comes up whenever you put a strong focus on one of the characters, especially if you know that, maybe someone's, maybe the advertisements are saying that someone's kind of not going to be around too much longer. So there was a certain tension when it came to everything involving Carter, and a kind of foreknowledge that everything was going to go wrong. But like you said, it didn't detract from the episode. It was it added to the tension. It added to my wonder at, how is this going to unfold? I know that it's going to go badly, but how badly, or how much can she possibly sort of save from it? I dig that I especially dig just the way they ended it, the way that it looks like they're going to roll into the next episode, the idea of leaving a lot of the cloak and dagger aside and just going into a really direct conflict. We haven't had something like that since the end of season one. And I am seriously looking forward to it.
Oh, absolutely. That point about, the thinking the episode's going to end, I was definitely feeling that too. I mean, it actually reminded me of Prisoner's Dilemma from last season, where in that case, you basically thought it had ended, and then there was that whole last act when Stanton takes them out. With this one as well, I mean, I was having the same reaction because I'm DVRing as I'm going through the commercials. Whenever I get to a commercial break, it gives me the little time check, and there was one point where I was thinking, like, yeah, well, they must be close to wrapping this up, and I start fast forwarding and realize it's only halfway through. So it was definitely a case of a lot of very good stuff packed in there, and also just some very nice in addition to sort of playing on the whole Carter HR arc that they've been building, just the way they brought in some of the other stuff that's been set up this season. I kind of feel that this was the second date of the girls' night out, with Shaw pilfering Reese's arsenal to supply Carter, and did provide one of their trademark little bits of humor with Caviezel looking at that video and going, that's my grenade launcher. And with his usual dead on deadpan, and of course, after all this time of Elias getting stuck in the bunker, when Carter made that call, I was momentarily going like, wait a minute, who's she calling? Because I've just kind of gotten so used to him being, sort of literally on ice down there. And then they cut to that restaurant scene, and it was very nice to see Elias and Scarface, his lieutenant, back in action and back in play, and Rico Colantoni getting a chance to really trot out the ice cold but very entertaining crime boss again. And then I actually really wanted to taste that dish that he was working on. It looked like it was coming together really well. But yeah, I mean, this is just a case of them taking all of these little elements that that they've been building up all season, and you know, and we're only a third of the way into the season, and you know, just doing a really good job of bringing them all to a head. And yeah, I mean, I presume it certainly the way they're building this up, that we are looking at the final demise of HR, and they're going to really, you know, they are going to take him out with quite a battle, and then presumably move on to something else. And I would imagine something more machine related, but you know, that's not really the province for this episode yet. But you know, we had Elias on ice, now we kind of have Rude on ice, and this whole question of the new nature of the machine that I think they need to start digging into once we get past this latest little incident or series of incidents. And certainly I agree. I mean, I really liked the way they, even though this is a three-parter, and you know, yeah, so this would be more, you know, more where you're setting up the conflicts, that they did a really good job of getting to a point where, you know, there was a real conclusion to be had with this one, but then, you know, just rolling into this great setup of what I described in my review of winding up in a situation akin to that Clint Eastwood film, The Gauntlet, only in this case, you know, you've got a kick-ass Carter by his side instead of a cowering Sandra Locke. So, you know, yeah, this looks like it's going to be a very interesting middle episode. I mean, we're just talking about Supernatural, sort of, the problem sometimes with middle sections of story, but I certainly expect this one to be as kick-ass as what preceded it. And if I haven't covered everything, as I tend to do with this show, what else?
You do get rather into Person of Interest.
Yes, I do. I do.
but with very, very good reason. This was a pretty awesome episode.
And, yeah, let me just check for a minute. I think there was we covered just about everything. A couple of things. I mean, you know, just to get back to Carter, because this was very, very much her episode. You know, one thing I really liked was the the way she was setting them up and setting them against each other, I thought was, you know, was really nicely and meticulously done. And, you know, it's kind of a, you know, especially in an episode where they were calling back to her military roots, and, with, you know, especially the, you know, sort of the contrast between her and her husband, where, you know, she obviously made the transition back to civilian life, a lot more cleanly, and not without its own difficulties, but obviously, you know, managed to make it back much better than her husband did. And, you know, of course, she was in military intelligence, so this I thought it was a, you know, even though they didn't sort of directly acknowledge it, it's one of those things where you don't really have to, but she did a really good job with that. And particularly, I mean, coming out of the Elias meeting with the Russians, and then you know, after we've seen Shaw and Reese so often with their sniper rifles, you know, her showing that she is just as good with it, and you know, some nice little direct dig of, you know, where it making it obvious through the sight that, you know, no, yes, she could have shot to kill, but that wasn't her intent, just to shoot him up and scare Quinn, and also just in the midst of all that action, the nice little capper to all the flashbacks where, you know, I thought they did a really good job of her, you know, being very strong, you know, with her son, and then with the later when Paul met her at outside the police station after he'd sort of, you know, started getting his act together, but playing it very adult and mature of, you know, no, this wasn't, you know, like some, you know, reconciliation. It was like, you know, he understood what he'd done and, you know, how it had, you know, how things had changed. And, but then that final little scene, which also just, you know, put the real capper on this sense of, you know, oh no, she's, you know, she's going to be the one to get it. She is about to go to the judges and calls her son. Actually, no, I think she calls Paul. Yeah, that's how they set it up. Where, you know, and discover that, you know, yes, they have reconciled to the point where at least he can be there for Tyler, for their boy,
which is a nice moment. It said a lot.
Yeah,
without having to, with while being very practical.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, and especially given the previous scene, you know, where, you know, no, I mean, you know, he looked very sincere and, you know, and actually having really gotten the help, and then, you know, setting that up so that, you know, yeah, I mean, I really, you know, basically, I mean, you know, up until the moment when Reese came crashing in, I mean, I really thought, oh, this was the big, you know, the big fake out that, you know, yeah, we're all going to make you think that Fusco is the one to go, but it really is going to be Carter. But then the way they turned it around as well, I thought was, you know, it made sense in terms of the, you know, the team that they built up and the team, you know, the teamwork that that they've established, and, you know, and then also the little thing of, you know, oh no, we took your phone, and she's like, you know, oh, wake up, guys, you know. And so, you know,
it was also a far stronger cliffhanger. Like,
yeah,
the episode really could have ended on Carter in, you know, at HR's mercy. And next week, you know, tune in next week to find out whether or not they kill her.
Yes.
Even though we can all be pretty confident that that's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So instead they go for a different kind of cliffhanger. No, let's get her out of immediate danger. Mm-hmm. And then present, you know, the good guys with a scenario that seems impossible and antagonists, yes, that are very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of leaving us on the thing of like, well, you know, they're probably going to survive this, just like really a broader kind of question. You know, like, how are they going to get out of this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and again, I mean, you know, just really drawing on all the stuff they've set up so that, you know, we're in this, you know, I mean, yes, you know, sort of over-the-top situation, but certainly plausible for the show of, you know, yeah, they now have to get across the city with all of the corrupt cops and all of the criminals, basically on their tail. And it was a wonderful setup. And you know, yeah, just really looking forward to where they go with it. And I already know from some discussion we had off the air earlier this week, John was actually surprised at my rating. He said he couldn't believe I didn't give it a 10. I did give it a 9, but only because I'm holding back just slightly to see how the hero will fall stuff actually falls. So, you know, there was some of the obvious pointing at Fusco that, you know, though that has become so obvious at this point that, you know, I'm just assuming that the writing staff is not going to go there because they're better than that. So that is the only reason why I dropped it a point, waiting to see what happens there. But what would you give it, Bronze Thumb?
Yeah, 9's good. I feel like it needs the room to go up a notch in future weeks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I kind of felt that as well. But we will see. Well, I was going to say soon enough, but no, the problem is it's not really soon enough because this will just be part two. But we will reconvene once that happens and let you know about it next time.
Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter @Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time... And that's a good place to stop. Okay. I can't believe you didn't give it a 10.
Hmm? I've got to give it... It's the first of three.
I know, but still.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was flirting with it, obviously, but since there isn't really much criticism.
I think I literally hurt my arm from the fist pumping in this episode. This was like Carter is more awesome than words episode. That was kind of the way I would sum it up. But yeah, it didn't occur to me because I hadn't been keeping up with Mr. Caviezel and his family, and perhaps the issues that they were encountering, but. That may account for why it's been somewhat Reese light.
Yeah.
Up until recently.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there were certain contingencies that were put into place by the producers to ensure that he would still be able to.
Yeah, because I mean because he's always been very private and doesn't let much out about his private life, but sort of but there was. Fairly serious, like even like cancer type stuff going on that I believe, was treated, but with anything like that, who knows what might have come out of remission and, what. But certainly, but I think, a combination of that and also, the physical demands of the show was, he wasn't going to be able to keep doing that since he does insist on doing all that stuff himself.
But look, this guy's Jesus. Okay.
Yeah.
He'll be fine.
Shoot. I mean, I seem to remember as well. I mean, that he's sort of, he had to recover for a few months from that filming because he insisted on doing, actually enduring
a
lot of that.
Very much a method.
Yeah.
He's a very intense actor. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it.
Yep.
But for me, we'll have a chance to talk about this if we can all get together, but otherwise you and Bronstein can do it. Since I will be in a hotel in New York on Tuesday.
Okay.
Tomorrow from tomorrow night till Wednesday night, I'll be in.
Your wife know about this?
Yeah. It's not that kind of training. What was I going to say? As much as the promos initially made it seem like Fusco was going to be the one in jeopardy. As I was watching this episode, I was like, wow, this is really three seasons worth of development all coming to fruition. Her main storyline has always been this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And they even go to the trouble of kind of taking the time to check off the box of, and where is her son at?
Mm-hmm.
And here's the backstory for why this is meaningful.
Yep.
And so on and so forth. And it was just like all the alarms started going off. And I was like, oh no.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no.
This is the beginning of the end.
Oh yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah, no. Well, that's why I was amazed, you know, at how real they made the threat to her just in this episode. You know, to where it really was a distinct possibility that this is going to horribly backfire on her. But then, of course.
But yeah, it's like if this is so focused on HR.
Yeah.
Then clearly there are two characters that are in the line of fire.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And they're either going to pay off what they started here with Carter.
Yeah.
Or Fusco's big heroic redemptive moment
mm-hmm.
is going to be kind of taking her place.
Right. Yeah.
So it's really like it's either or. It's mm-hmm. not going to be Finch. It's not going to be Reese. It's not going to be Shaw. It's not going to be, it just wouldn't fit that story.
No.
Because I was thinking the only other one I can really think of that would do it would be possibly Shaw,
mm-hmm.
but they haven't really paid any of her stuff off yet.
No, exactly. Yeah, and
her function as like you said, the bleed off valve for when Reese needs to be out of the picture so Caviezel can take care of business and, recover.
Yes.
Whatever he did to himself this week.
Yeah, exactly. But, but it was also a thing, because I just mentioned it just briefly, but all the stuff they were checking out with Carter, but then, with Fusco, it was like they're being way too obvious, you're the best partner I've ever had, and that sort of thing. throwing those standard tropes of, look out for this guy, and, and the promos, of course, are just, hammering.
Oh, yes.
And I keep looking at that and going, no, not with this writing staff. they would.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that's too easy.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is because they're showing scenes from a 3-episode arc.
Mm-hmm.
My initial guess was that either that was going to be the start of it, all that stuff with Fusco, or that's from the middle episode.
Right.
Show something that was from the final. Mm-hmm. They're not even CBS wouldn't do that.
Certainly with this next episode being called The Crossing, and it's them having to get get Quinn to the FBI through every bad cop and criminal in the city. That certainly seems to be the setup of they grab Fusco for leverage, but presumably that will be happening, but then easily take the bleed into the 3rd episode for it to actually pay off. So
they are doing a really interesting job of keeping information out of the public eye.
Mm-hmm.
There's pretty much no information anywhere about what these next 2 episodes are about. And they're not really releasing any information other than episode titles beyond that, because they don't want to tip their hand.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, CBS is working with them to really make this an event.
Yeah.
To say the least. And, of course, the ratings continue to be fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
A little bit lower than last year, but I think that has more to do with the time slot change than it does anything else. Because it worked so much better in the time slot that they had it in.
Oh, absolutely. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah, and of course, I've been a little bit surprised at, there is some sort of anti-Shaw backlash out there, but I don't think that's what's affecting the ratings.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
Yeah.
Because people were almost universally in love with that episode last season.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed like an obvious thing to bring her in, and yet I don't know if it's because they feel like Reese is being written in less because she's there. But again, I think that your kind of guesstimate over what's going on makes a lot of sense. It's like, no, that he just needs time.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, no, but it's gonna be a fun 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I was just checking, yeah, so what's the break then? So then it's what they're off for 3 weeks after.
Yeah, I think they come back the 17th.
Yep, yep.
I'm sure that will be a relatively light episode, you know, not light episode, but, you know, Fallout episode, Aftermath episode.
Yep.
I'm just curious what else is on at that time that would possibly be in the way.
I want the Tuesday at 10.
Yeah, let's see. Not much, but it's just, they went from 9 o'clock, I think.
Oh, that's right. No, I forgot it was day and time.
Yeah. I mean, 10 o'clock is just always a little bit less viewers. But that's just a, but it's still just a barely a drop. I mean, it's.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I know it's, because I've been checking it myself every now and then. But, you know, it's still pulling like 11 to 12 million. And
yeah, it's been up to 13.
Decent demos, so.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's fine. It's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Okay. Yes, sure. I guess. I mean, even though I've had no interest in whatsoever, I think, yeah, Chicago Fire was kind of NBC's surprise. Well, and of course, it's in that After the Voice time slot, so. And of course, has Sarah Shahi as well. So.
We stole her.
Yeah.
She had to come over because she wanted it that way.
Yeah.
Let's see here. That wasn't supposed to open. Why did that open? That's not good. Okay.
Oh.
Sorry, I'm compiling this as we go.
Yeah.